We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. That's Matt Nagy. He is the head coach of your Chicago Bears. And we are delighted to welcome in our friend Bob Laguerre. He is covering the Bears for Pro Football Weekly. Bob, how are you?
Morning, Bob.
You know, it's been less than 24 hours, and I'm already missing Bourbon A.
Yeah, it's tough.
Who doesn't?
It's tough to move on when you're the Bags champion of Bourbon A. when you have that glory in your corner, it's difficult to give up. You know who doesn't miss Bourbon A? Roquan Smith. He never knows. He'll never know. Are they going to make him go down there and just spend a night so he can?
Well, they should go down there. They should make him go down there and spend 2 or 3 weeks like we all have to do. So then it'd be even.
You should make him go to Platteville just to teach him a lesson. What the hell is going on, Bob? Why is this kid not signed? Well, how many days is it now, Dave? We just said it was
27.
Is it 27. 31 or bust? Is that it?
And you know what? We were talking about this the other day, and common sense would tell you that this kid is not going to miss a game check. But I think common sense waved bye-bye to this situation a long time ago. It's ridiculous what they're arguing over, a situation that probably happens on average once every 3 years, a game suspension for an on-field incident not involving being in violation of the new tackling rule with the crown of the helmet. This would be a suspension for a brawl after a game or something that was done on the field and results in a suspension. And when can anybody remember that happening ever? It's like these guys, you know, and there's blame enough to go on both sides, but I have to blame this guy's agents because this is a situation that's never going to come up. And now this kid who was supposed to be and was going to be a day one starter for the Bears, I don't know if you can say that anymore. He's obviously going to miss the third game. He won't play in that. So we'll have at most 2 preseason games to play, and that's not enough to get him up to speed in this defense.
Looking at the rookies who are there, Bob, I thought it was interesting that James Daniels had such a nice debut, if you will, at center against the Bengals. He flashed a little bit. He looked like a guy that they could count on maybe moving forward, and yet you heard Matt Nagy yesterday kind of reiterate the fact that Cody Whitehair is going to stay at center when I think it's fair to wonder, projecting forward, it's still only August 13th, is the Bears offensive line better off with James Daniels at center and Cody Whitehair at left guard? But that doesn't sound like something he's open to.
Yeah, they've been adamant from draft day going forward that Cody Whitehair is going to be the center just for the sake of continuity with Mitch Trubisky. And I get that, but by doing that, if James Daniels makes the starting lineup by week one, which is still a possibility, then you're playing 2 guys at their second best position. Because I think the consensus is that Whitehair's a better guard than center, and James Daniels would obviously have an easier transition to the NFL if he played the position that he played in college for 3 years. So I think James Daniels maybe can be a starting guard in the NFL at some point. I don't know if it's going to be this year. Keep in mind that the kid's only 20 years old. So he's dealing with a lot of stuff. And you know, maybe he will be the left guard, but I don't think the question is the center position. I think the question is left guard because you've got 3 guys there. Eric Cush is the current starter. Earl Watford has gotten snaps with the first team. And then Daniels, if he gets into the starting lineup, it's going to be at guard if you believe everything the Bears say. So I think that position is wide open at this point. And center seems to be a done deal with Cody Whitehair there.
To quote a famous writer I know, Chase Daniels, the biggest thing he's done this year is get Mitch Trubisky's autograph at camp. I mean, what are they going to have to get a cornerback? Can they go into a season with this group?
Well, not if Trubisky gets hurt. You cannot go into a season with Chase Daniel and Tyler Bray, although Tyler Bray has looked pretty good in the preseason, but keep in mind he's playing against third stringers and guys who won't be in the league when the regular season starts. I'd be real nervous if anything happened to Mitch Trubisky. I would think they would have to go out and get somebody who's proven, who's a proven starter in the league. Chase Daniel, in his defense, knows the offense inside and out. The problem is he just hasn't played in it very much. And I think when he's in there, even in the preseason games, the offense seems to run more smoothly than with Trubisky there, which is why you would think, I mean, Trubisky has to play at least a half, if not more, in this upcoming game Saturday, because with him in there, this offense has no cohesion to this point.
Bob, a couple texters got on my case a little while ago when I made the suggestion that the Bears never replaced Alshon Jeffrey until they signed Allen Robinson. It was a year too late, but essentially Allen Robinson is replacing Alshon Jeffrey, and somebody made the point, well, you can't. That's not a good replacement because Alshon Jeffrey is a much better receiver than Allen Robinson. I don't know that I agree with that, but what do you think the Bears are getting in Allen Robinson? And some of the big play potential, aren't those skills similar to what Jeffrey had to offer?
Yeah, to me, if anything, Allen Robinson might be better than Alshon Jeffrey. Alshon Jeffrey had a couple nice seasons in Chicago, no doubt about it. But Allen Robinson, to me, that's one of the big stories of training camp. It's amazing how good this guy looks less than 11 months after tearing his ACL. They haven't played him in the first two preseason games, but he really wants to play Saturday. I think he will. And based on the plan they have for him, he's going to be 100% by opening day and ready to go. And that was the plan all along. They weren't too worried about the preseason. They know what this guy can do. And to me, he's been a surprise. I didn't think he'd be out on the field in Bourbonnais even half the time. And I think he wound up missing two practices. So they have to be thrilled with the situation there.
They also have to be thrilled that Leonard Floyd made a play. I mean, his pressure helped create that interception. And that, of course, was a pick six, and it's good to see a pick six, and it's good to see Leonard Floyd show. I thought he had a couple of moments in that game. I worry, though, about that position. I know they got a lot of undersized guys, and they got a lot of guys they want to kind of rotate through, but they don't have a lot of proven commodity at the pass rusher spot on either side other than Floyd is, and I don't know that he's proven anything, but potential. Who are we missing here? Who's going to be? I mean, I know the names. I just haven't seen the production.
Well, you're right. They're rotating a lot of guys through, and none of them have done anything. Leonard Floyd did flash, and if he's healthy, he's a double-digit sack guy. Everybody believes that, and when he does flash, you can see that the potential is there. If he's healthy for 16 games, he's going to put up numbers. The problem is he's never played more than 12 games to this point, and they have taken it extremely slowly with him because his injury last year, he did have surgery, but it was kind of a minor deal. It wasn't a complete tear of any ligaments, and he did nothing the entire offseason. I mean, absolutely zero. But he's another guy. He's been in practice every day. They're bringing him along slowly. But I think the plan is working to this point. The other guys, they signed Aaron Lynch, who put up some numbers 4 years ago in Vic Fangio's defense in San Francisco, maybe 5 years ago. If you believe the Bears, Aaron Lynch suffered a hamstring injury in the first practice, which was essentially a walkthrough, and he's been out for more than 3 weeks now. That doesn't bode well for the season. The guy was also hurt in the offseason, and he kind of comes with a reputation as a guy who isn't a real hard worker. He's got some talent. He's got some skills. But has never done it and, you know, doesn't really seem like he wants to be out there. Maybe when the lights come on, fourth or fifth preseason game, he shows up and gives them what they're looking for. The other guy, Tyler Fitz, the rookie, definitely has flashed as a pass rusher. Not a complete linebacker at this point, but he's a guy who could probably come in from day one once the regular season starts and give them a pass rush presence. I don't know if he can do anything else. He's inexperienced in coverage. Against the run game, he kind of lost contain in that first game when he had a couple of quarterback pressures and a sack. But he's a guy who makes your pass rush better right now. Isaiah Irving's another guy who's flashed. But as far as guys who have done it, Sam Acho is a solid player. He came in as a backup, and he's always been considered a backup. But I think he started 25 games in the last 3 years for the Bears because somebody's always hurt. and he gets playing time. But again, not a big sack guy. So it's basically Leonard Floyd and a bunch of guys at this point.
Bob, early in camp, undrafted free agent cornerback Kevin Tolliver made some early impressions with his consistency. I think you saw the first preseason game. Javon Wims was a wide receiver, seventh round pick, who flashed a little bit. Who are the names of some guys who have been under the radar and maybe we wouldn't recognize, who have made an impression and have a shot to make the 53?
Well, Ryan Nall is a guy who, if you look at what he did at Oregon State, he put up great numbers. He's the biggest running back on the roster, and he had a 69-yard run last Thursday night against the Bengals. The guy is deceiving because, and I talked to him yesterday and he said, yeah, you know, people underestimate my speed. I don't know if it's because of his size or because he's a white guy. People don't expect him to be that fast. He said, well, people always take the wrong angle on me, thinking I'm not fast. And he had three runs of more than 75 yards at Oregon State. And this is a 232-pound guy who has great hands, can catch the ball, and clearly is big enough to be a blocking presence in the pass game. So he's a guy who, to me, has stepped up and looked better than anybody else. Obviously, they're not going to run Jordan Howard or Tariq Cohen much in the preseason, but this looks like a guy who, if he's not on the 53, is at least on the practice squad.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Bob, thanks a ton, man. Great catching
thanks,
up
with
Bob. You. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
That is Bob Laguerre, Pro Football Weekly, covering the Chicago Bears, and a longtime guy, good friend of ours.
And, you know, you mentioned some guys at the bottom of the roster. That's where the Bears, you find some guys sometimes.
Is Aaron Lynch, is he going to make this roster?
I don't know that he's done anything to deserve it.
Yeah.
Except for sign the contract.
Well.
And his history with Vic Fangio.
Well.
What else, as Bob pointed out, he has that, but he's not proven anything else except for he's injury prone.
He's got to get on the field.
And he's a slow healer.
Yeah.
Is that unfair?
It's totally unfair, but it's completely fair. I mean, it's unfair to judge a guy who can't play, but if you can't play, you know, availability is the number one ability. If you're unable to play, you're unable to prove anything. And in my opinion, should be unable to make the team.
Well, but in his favor is the point.
Is the relationship with the defensive coordinator.
Well, and also the fact that they have a need.
And there you go.
Opposite
That's
Leonard
right.
Floyd.
Yeah. The vacuum always will.
Rush the passer, make the team.
Will help a guy.
You got to stay healthy.
Yeah. Well, we got to see something out of him, though, don't you? I mean, it's very hard to project how someone fits in if you don't know. We're going to talk a little golf next. We will take you to the fine city of St. Louis, and we'll talk about what went on this weekend. We'll talk about Brooks Koepka because he was the winner, but we'll talk.
Oh, by the way,
we'll talk more about Tiger Woods because he's Tiger Woods and he finished second.
Brooks Koepka wins three majors of the last seven, and he's the secondary story.
How does that happen? We'll discuss it next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score. Let's get out to Jason Sobel. He, of course, senior golf writer for Action Network and longtime guy. Jason, how are you?
Hey, Jason.
I am doing great. Good morning, guys. What a long week and what an awesome week. That was just so much fun. I ran to some colleagues in the airport this morning, and we were all still had big smiles on our face after watching that yesterday. It was so much fun to watch.
You know what's unbelievable about it is we came out of that just talking about Tiger and amazing and what did Tiger do. And they even said on the broadcast, oh, my God, the media is all following Tiger. Brooks Koepka, he won that thing and he was cold as ice. He was so consistent. He was
never
just
blinked.
So poised. And, I mean, I don't know. I was so impressed with the way that he handled the whole thing. And yet, Tiger's the story because he shot a 64 and he looked like he might win a major before it's all said and done.
Well, I agree with all that. First things first, I don't quite understand Brooks Koepka. I'm not like him. I don't know anybody else like him. Most guys win major championships and they start crying and they hug everyone they can find and they kiss the trophy as much as possible. Brooks wins a major and looks like, so where are we going to dinner after this? Brooks is so cool and calm. As far as the Tiger part of this equation, this is the law of supply and demand. I've been saying that for years. And as long as the public demands the attention of us bringing Tiger Woods to the spotlight, then we are going to supply it in the media. And, of course, it's going to be a huge story. That's what it should be. I mean, Tiger's sort of on his ninth life right now. He went through an incredible personal scandal, which might have been enough to bury anyone there. He's been through four back surgeries. He went through the chipping yips. I mean, this guy has been through more comebacks than anybody else, maybe in the history of sports, to get back to this elite level. And the fact that he shot the lowest score of any final round in a major championship in his career yesterday, I think that speaks volumes about not just where his game is right now, but where it's going over the next couple of years, too.
And where he's been, is that what makes it more relatable, Jason? I mean, you look at the way that this guy galvanized an event, galvanizes a sport like only he can. And, you know, there was a time where his dominance just made you stare. And that's why you wanted to be there on Sunday for the final round. But I think that, you know, some of the things that he's overcome, maybe his vulnerability almost makes him a little bit more easy to root for, maybe more, I think, you know, attractive to the general casual sports fan. I don't know. But yesterday was very familiar, but it's been a while since you felt like that about Tiger Woods.
I absolutely agree with that. I don't think that in the past as many people necessarily flocked to Tiger because they loved him. It was more because they were in awe of him. They wanted to catch a glimpse of him. They wanted to see history with their own eyes. Now, people are cheering for him. Did you see the reception that he got, that sea of people, that mass of people as he was walking across the steps to go to the scoring area? That was amazing. I've never seen anything like that. I've been covering golf for 18 years now, and there's nothing that's been close to that sort of reception for a player at the end of a tournament, and especially for a guy who didn't win. And the other thing I've never seen before is Tiger Woods finishing in second place and sort of being okay with it. I think he understands that for a guy who spent so much of his career saying, you know, it's like the old line, if you're not first, you're last. He doesn't necessarily think that way anymore. At least he didn't this past weekend. This was a moral victory, an emotional victory. I know that some people look at it and say, well, if he didn't have a bad start on Thursday morning, well, if he didn't miss a few putts on Saturday, well, if he didn't drive one way right on 17, those are all fine. We can question things like that. The fact of the matter is this guy, 11 months ago, sat down in front of the media at the President's Cup, told us he was completely unsure of his future, did not know if he'd ever play golf again, and now here he is less than a year later finishing second in a major championship. It is remarkable the progress that he has made.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. And, you know, obviously we look at all the young guns and all of these players just go through the rankings. You know, it's hard to find a spot that isn't covered with somebody that could potentially win a mate. It just seems like there's more competition now than ever. And there's some really good young players that you would think would be good for a long time. And that's, you know, is a guy blocked when you start talking about how you are going to finally break through?
Well, that's the biggest hurdle, I think, for Tiger is that there is so much competition out there. I sat with, we had myself and seven other colleagues last night as we were kind of winding down the evening, just kind of talking about everything that had happened. And one of them posed the question, which golfer would you take over the course of the next 5 years, just the golfer to be the most successful? We had six different answers. And after that, and that's of eight people.
Who'd you answer?
That, I said, I went with Justin Thomas. And quite frankly, I could change that answer tomorrow and change it back again the next day because there's so much other competition. There's Dustin Johnson, there's Koepka, there's
Jordan Spieth.
There's Jordan Spieth, there's Rory McIlroy. Even if you want to go with Tiger, it's hard to actually argue Tiger right now, although a 48-year-old Tiger may not be able to hang with those guys 5 years from now. But there's so much talent. I'm not sure there's been a moment in golf's history where you could have said, hey, here's six golfers over the course of the next 5 years. I don't know who's going to be best. I mean, this is sort of uncharted territory, and I think it's awesome. I think it's great for the game, and I think it's sort of a golden age for golf where we've got the older generation of Tiger and, to an extent, Phil Mickelson, who's not playing great right now, and they're playing against these young guys who are fearless and hit the ball a million miles and are really fun to watch and know how to win.
Jason, really enjoyed your column on the Action Network. I thought it was it captured everything that happened and kind of alluded to this crowd that we keep hearing about. And as you watched at home, you got a sense that this didn't seem like your typical golf crowd. It seemed very much more energized. Tiger referenced it. Other golfers referenced it. How would you describe the crowd and the way St. Louis hosted this event and maybe the effect it had on the play? Did Tiger respond because the crowd was just that much a part of the event, or how would you describe it?
Well, you guys in Chicago know what it's like to not have an event for a little while. You guys keep going back and forth with having the BMW, which is a shame that you don't have one every year. But St. Louis hasn't had anything there in 10 years, and they've never seen Tiger Woods before. They showed up in droves. I will say that at every event I go to, someone in the local media will ask the players, hey, how about those fans? How about the support you have? Players will inevitably answer, oh, yeah, it was great. You know, it was great to hear the fans cheering my name. They will say that every single week. They really meant it this week. I'm telling you, I've never seen a scene like that. There were so many people out there, and it wasn't really the Baba Booey crowd. It wasn't really the getting the whole crowd. There was a little of that here and there. We'll get more of that at Bethpage next year, I'm sure. But this was a really good golf crowd, and I think that they were treated to a good show after having to wait for so long for this tournament to develop.
Jason, thanks a ton. Just on the way out, who won among the eight writers? And there were only six names, so who was the winner?
We had three Justin Thomases, so two other guys were correct and answered with me.
Fair enough. All right,
thanks,
buddy. Thank you.
Take care, Jason.
Thanks, guys.
That's awesome. That's Jason Sobel. Wow.
But that's Justin an interesting Thomas. Exercise, and it tells you the range of possibilities for golf.
It also says run to the window, Joe, because okay, those guys do it for a living.
Joe doesn't need much encouragement.
Yeah, exactly.
Koepka has three times as many majors as the number one player in the world. Dustin Johnson. He shouldn't be the number one player much longer, though. But yeah, he just after all that, he kind of goes unnoticed. He's won three majors in the last three of the last seven majors. Unreal.
Mullay and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Bruce Levine is The Score's baseball expert. Morning, Bruce.
Morning, Bruce.
Morning, guys. Are our conversations ever heated? Do we ever have to decide to go to have drinks afterwards? That would be fun, actually, this time of the morning.
I honest to God, every conversation I have is heated.
If you say that again, Bruce, I'm going to yell at you.
You know, I think the essence of this stuff about Joe with A-Rod and now with The Athletic reporting yesterday that the conversation between Rodriguez and Madden was heated at times. They called it fiery. The denial by Joe. Let's listen to Joe talking a little bit about the fact that his conversation with A-Rod was nothing like it was described after the game. And that's the essence, again, Madden has to deal with this from the media side as well as from the A-Rod side 2 weeks ago, the same type of thing, you know, where there is nobody on the record saying how this became a heated discussion. Now, The Athletic does a good job. Patrick Mooney is an outstanding reporter. He's a credible guy. A-Rod didn't back away from his comments yesterday, although they said that they're trying to move on and establish a relationship. So I think in this day and age, we're talking about, you know, people protecting themselves or clubhouses, people protecting sources, and all of us kind of being in the middle of it.
That's fine. I mean, everybody who's been in the media, who's criticized somebody, you know, a team they cover is going to go through this. It's not a big deal ultimately. And if Joe lost his temper a little bit, fine. I mean, move on. I think he probably something might have been lost in translation. It's not as big of an issue as A-Rod not backing down. He had an opinion. He had information. He used it. That's his job. So,
right.
So fine. Bruce, as for the game, we have sort of established that was the victory of the season. David Bode hitting .329 in 34 games since he's been brought up. What's his role moving forward?
I think he plays third base and the Cubs trade to Chris Bryant at the end of the season. No, I mean, you know, realistically, he could be your second baseman going into next year. You're looking at Addison Russell struggling for the second year in a row. He got a mulligan, and no pun intended, Mike, for being able to for last year because he was injured for a long period of time. This year, we've heard about the finger impacting him. We haven't heard much about it lately, but those type of numbers right now, that production is not going to be enough going forward. So I believe that Bodie keeps playing this way, that you have possible movement of Baez at short, you have Bodie at second, you have numerous trades that are made in the offseason that Addison Russell is a part of that.
What do you make of Yu Darvish? What do you make of Tyler Chatwood, Brandon Morrow? I mean, is it just move forward with, you know, a fantastic get here with a potential stud coming in, an elder guy that sniffs the finish line and is hyper competitive, or do we know how you line it up? Do we know who's coming back or what it's going to look like?
No, you know what? It's great theater every day there,
yep.
Isn't it?
I mean,
they have a 3-game lead for what reason? I mean, point out why the Cubs have a 3-game lead in that division, other than 10 or 11 teams in the National League being pretty much equal, and the Cubs having tremendous depth in their lineup, finding ways to win. Joe Maddon doing a sensational job of handling a bullpen of guys he hardly knows from day to day and getting the very most out of them. I think it's tremendous theater, and if people don't enjoy it as a reporter and as a fan, I enjoy it quite a bit because we don't know about Darvish. The smart money right now is on the fact that he throws his sim game tomorrow and that he goes out for an assignment. Who knows, might be South Bend again over the weekend. And that might be the next move. It looks like the move to make. And with Morrow, we haven't heard a date. With with Brian, we talked to him over the week, during the week, and he said, he's progressing, but he has no return date. I think it's a lot of fun. If you're a Cub fan, it's great intrigue. And the fact that your team has a 3-game lead here with – some 40-odd games left should be a lot of fun.
And the intrigue increases tomorrow, Bruce, when the Brewers come to town for a 2-game series, and the lead is 3 games. But I look at the Cardinals, and I see a team that is the best team in the National League in the last 25. Mike Schilt, the interim manager, has something going right. They're 16-9. They're 5.5 back. Is it too early to sleep on the Cardinals?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the Pirates as well. I mean, the Cubs have a lot of games inter division with all these teams. They finished the season with 7 straight against the Pirates and the Cardinals at Wrigley Field. You think that's going to mean something? I think it will. So, I mean, do the Cubs have enough right now to pull away from the rest of the division? I don't really think so. I still think they're the best team in the division. That said, Like you said, David, the Cardinals are an evolving team. They've changed on the fly 2 years in a row after the trading deadline. They have some young, really great arms in their rotation. They've changed their bullpen. You'd be challenged to name a lot of the people in their pitching rotation in their bullpen, but they're young, powerful arms that are getting the job done. And you hate to say it, but with Dexter Fowler out, they've been a better team. They don't have to worry about putting him in the lineup after hitting 180 this year. They have some really hungry young players there. I think it's going to be a fun division all the way down. And I think it's been, you know, except for the angst, the Cub fans that feel like, their team should win by 10 games, I think it's been a terrific year.
Bruce, thanks a ton. Great catching up.
Thanks,
appreciate
Bruce.
It, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
That is our guy, Bruce Levine, the Scores baseball expert. Always fun to talk to Bruce, and it was certainly a wonderful weekend of baseball and a lot of fun for the Cubs. And as I said, I went out to the Sox game, had a good time.
And when you meet Loaf, the Nationals.
There you go.
It's a good weekend.
312-644-6767. We've got Art in Humble Park who texted in earlier, and David, of course, rallied to
Art
get his story on the air.
What a lot of people probably naturally did last night. He left in the 9th inning.
I did, and it is much to my chagrin that I did. My son and I saw the top of the 9th, and we said, well, that's that. Either like most people, no, I shouldn't say most people, but many people started leaving. And so we did as well to catch the train, and as we're transferring trains, the fellow comes up to me and goes, "Hell of a comeback, huh?" And I go, I look at him like he's nuts. I said, "What do you mean? What are you talking about?" He goes, "David Bodie hit a grand slam in the bottom of the ninth." And I checked my phone and I just said, "Ah, crap."
Did you have to be talked into leaving? Did you talk your son into leaving?
No, my son said, "Well, let's go, Dad." And I'm like, "Okay." I didn't talk him out of it. I thought there's not a chance. And he's sitting here as I'm driving him to school, and he's crossing his arms, and he's annoyed with me now. I regret it to this day. It's only been one day. But I was at game 3, 4, and 5 of the World Series. I worked security for them in 2016.
Awesome.
And I can promise you that Wrigley Field did indeed bounce after game 5. I don't know if it bounced last night because I wasn't there.
Oh, boy.
But it did bounce after game 5. I can promise you that.
Art, thanks to Todd.
Thanks, Art.
For sharing.
Thanks for checking
in. We appreciate it. That is absolutely hilarious.
And I'm sure
poor
he wasn't
guy.
Alone.
Anyone and his poor who, son.
Yeah, his poor son. Anyone who left the park, anybody who turned it off. Look.
No, it's not a disgrace. You're entitled to try to beat traffic and get out.
It's 3-0. You figure.
How many times have they come back
over
the past 3 years? You sit your ass down in that little green seat till the final out.
It's 3-0. It's the bottom of the ninth.
This is why people have no respect for Cub fans.
Wow.
That's harsh.
Wow. That is rough. Kevin. We'll do some transition next. It's Smully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.